Morning. Today's daf in Baba Kama is Tzadi. We begin today on Pei Tesamad Aleph. We are towards the middle of the Amud. We're starting today with the words Amar Abaye. We learned yesterday about Takanas Usha. A moment to thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf, as well as Zichron Nishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We learned today, yesterday, one of the Takanas Usha, as I pointed out yesterday, there were a number of Takanas that were made in Usha. Usha, one of the cities that the Sanhedrin was exiled to after the destruction of the second base of Mikdash. So they instituted in Usha the rabbinic legislation, and one of them is that a woman cannot sell her nechs nemalug. A woman goes into a marriage, and she has property, so that property can be rolled in one of two ways into the marriage. One way she could take her property and roll into the marriage is put it into the ksuva herself. You, generally speaking, that's what we would call in English a dowry, where the dowry where the, she would come in with a certain amount of property that was appraised, that was put into the ksuva itself, and that property is fundamentally the husband's property. It's not her property. Yes, it's true at the termination of the marriage. If the marriage terminates where either he dies or he divorces her, he's going to have to make a full restitution of the appraised property for its full value, even if the property itself depreciates, but that's what's called Nichsei Tzon Barzal. But we're focusing on the Nichsei Malug. Nichsei Malug is a property that she retains for herself. It's property that she has going into the marriage. She retains it for herself, and it's her property. However, during the marriage, he gets to enjoy the peiros. Any of the dividends, literally the fruit coming off the field, so that belongs to the husband. So the keren, the principal of the property, is hers, and the peiros is his. Now, in yesterday's Gemara, we had a major machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, how to view Kinyan Peros, and we side with Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Kinyan Peros, lavki Kinyan Agov Dami. When a person has Kinyan Peros, when the person has the rights to enjoy the dividends of a property, it does not make him any kind of owner in the property. That is the opinion of Reish Lakish, and so therefore, in this relationship between the husband and wife, where she is the principal owner and he only has the Peros, so fundamentally, he cannot stop her from selling the property. It's hers, the property. She is the owner. She is a bailus. She is a bala of the property, and she can sell it, and he can't stop her from doing so. That is, generally speaking, the ground rules. That's the literally the ground rules in terms of how to understand her property, her nechs nemalug property. Comes the chachamim and instituted an usha that basically they gave the husband the status of first buyer, meaning that even though the minah Torah, when does he get the property? Only when she dies. When she dies, he'll inherit the property. But the chachamim instituted that he's going to be treated always like a first buyer of that property. So at the time they get married, now he has a shibud, he has a lien on that property. And so that in the event that she sells the property, so the husband takes it away from the seller when she dies. Okay, this is one of the institutions of Usha. Why did they institute this in Usha? So Rashi gave the explanation yesterday. So it's going to hopefully create more harmony and unity in the marriage. If she gets it, she goes into a marriage and she has property and she starts selling off the property, husband's looking at her and saying, what are you doing? Meaning, I'm not sure if he's going to say this outward, but we could say this on his behalf, meaning that could possibly be my property. If you die, I'm going to inherit that property. Why would you sell off that property? So it could create Eva, could create animosity. So basically, the Chachamim locked her property into the marriage so that to try to create a little more harmony and unity within the marriage. This is what we discussed in yesterday's daf. This was Takanas Usha. Basically, what the Gemara then tried to do yesterday was find Takanas Usha in the Mishnayos, meaning the Mishnah never spells this out. The Mishnayos never spell it out. Now, it's kind of understandable, meaning if it's Takanas Usha, that means that historically this institution, this rabbinic legislation, predates the Mishnah, but not by much. Meaning the Mishnayos were written also post Chorban Bayis Sheni. So, but Usha, one of the towns where the basin was sent into exile, also came after Chorban Bayis Sheni. So basically, we're talking about not much historic overlap between the Mishnayos and the actual Takanas Usha itself. And can we find Takanas Usha in the Mishnayos? So we tried that yesterday. We quoted the Mishnah in Makos, and the Mishnah in Makos seems to be very good evidence that you see this idea that a woman cannot be selling her nechse malug, because we talked about the Mishnah of Edom Zomimim. And why doesn't the Mishnah over there mention the Nechs and Maluk? But the Gemara's answer over there is that that's not a compelling argument. It could be that the woman was married not with Nechs and Maluk, but rather Nechs and Tzom Barzal, and that's fundamentally his. So the Mishnah Makos is not a clear indication of seeing Takanasusha in the Mishnayos. Amar Abaye. We are in the Gemara now in Pei Tesem and Alpha. This is where we pick it up from yesterday. So Abaye says, Tofas Anah, Hova Asan Liyadan Nema Bamilsa. So listen, we're on the topic of Tofas Anah. Tofas Anah is basically what we would call here in business factoring, meaning that it's paper, and paper's got value, and it's just a question of figuring out how much the value of that paper is. So her ksuva has a current value. Now the current value obviously is not the face value. The face value is what she stands to collect in the event that he dies or he divorces her. So that's the face value of the ksuva. Its current value is basically what someone's ready to pay for that piece of paper. Again, what we call here factoring. So the Gemara says, in terms of when a woman sells her tofas hana of her ksuva, she gets to keep the money. Now that sounds kind of obvious, meaning of course, it's her ksuva, it's her note, it's her sale of her note, of course she keeps the money. So the Gemara is saying, now what isn't obvious about this is the following. Generally speaking, when a woman gets money in a married state, so that money is going to be put into a, I didn't lose my train of thought, I just lost words. That's all. It's not such a big deal. If a woman gets money in a married state, so the money is structured in a married state, meaning that generally speaking, what's going to happen is that the money will be transferred into property, the property will be hers, and the parents go to her husband. What the Gemara is teaching us now is that when a woman sells her ksuva for its tovas hanah, for its factored value, so that money is hers to the exclusion of her husband. Gemara says, and I'll tell you, Rabbi says, and I'll tell you how I know that. So, Abaye says, I know from the Mishnah Makos. Remember the Mishnah Makos that we saw yesterday? Where if you have Edom Zomimim who are trying to cause a loss to the woman, so they have to pay the woman what they caused her to loss. Okay, and again, the Mishnah Makos talks about not the face value of the ksuva, but the factored value of the ksuva. But the Gemara's Abaye's point is as follows. Of course that money's hers. Because if that money's not hers, so can the Edom Zomim say, look, we're bad people. We're not debating we're bad people. But that's not your money. It's your husband's money. Why in the world would we have to pay? So this is Abaye's argument that the Tovas Hanah money goes to her, not to the husband. So Amar Rav Saman, Mishum De'ika Revach Besa. So Rav Saman says, look, it's not a compelling argument. It's good, it's just not great. We could make the argument that the money that she gets for the Tovas Hanah is going to actually go then to her husband. We could make that argument. And in terms of why it makes her happier because when there's more money in the marriage, okay, I know money doesn't bring happiness, but I've heard this quote. I'm repeating a quote that I've heard. This is not an original. Money does not bring happiness, but it's certainly a good down payment. So the... So she's in general happier that there's money in the marriage. So the Gemara says revach besa. So it's not a compelling argument to say that the tovas hanah has to go to her. It could go to her husband, and she's still happy. Amar Rava hilchasa. The Rava says now that the established halach is tovas hanah leisha ve'nava ocha peres. So Rava now is going to be in total agreement with Abaye. Okay, it's good to hear. They agree most of the time. It's accentuated in the Gemara all the times they disagree. But for the times that they disagree, you know, there's much more agreement than there is disagreement. They're disagreeing on some of the finer points, but they agree. Here's a good illustration where they agree. They agree that when a woman's selling the tovas hanah for ksuva, so that money goes to her to the exclusion of her husband. My taima per takin l'rabbanan per depe lo takin l'rabbanan. So the Gemara says because look. As I explained just a moment ago, when money does come into a marriage and heads to the direction of the woman, so that money is going to be rolled into property and the husband's going to enjoy the peros. Over here, that's not going to be so because, says Rava, look, that money that she's getting for Iksuva, that already is peros. Meaning, that's not karka, that already is peros. So to then take that money, roll it into property, and have the husband enjoy peros, so that's effectively peros to peros, it's a derivative of peros. And that the rabbis did not institute, and so therefore she gets to keep the money entirely to the exclusion of her husband. Okay, period. Okay, ki asra papa v'ravuna b'reid rav Yeshua mibei rav amri tanina l'takanas usha. We're going to go back to that exercise that we tried yesterday. Let's see takanas usha in some of the mishnayos. Again, takanas usha prevents a woman from selling her nechse malog, even though in theory she should be able to sell her nechse malog, as I explained at the beginning of this year today. Nechse malog is hers. The husband only has peros. We subscribe to Reish Lakish. Kinyan peros lavka kinyan guftami. So the nechse malog is hers. She should be able to sell it. And the institution of usha was that she cannot sell it, and the husband becomes the first lokeach on that property. So the Gemara says, and I'll show you that this is so based on a Mishnah. And not just any Mishnah, our Mishnah. The Mishnah that we saw in the course of yesterday's daf, and the Mishnah goes like this. We learned in the Mishnah that when a woman damages another person, bodily damage, it's not going to be good for the nechma, it's not going to be good for the victim, because she has simply no money to pay for those damages. And as a result of that, it's unfortunate, but he's not going to get reimbursed for the chavala, for the physical damage that she did to him. Now the Gemara says, now let's consider, she has no money? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Of course she should have it. She has nechse malug. The Gemara, of course, is making the assumption, but let's make it. She has nechse malug property. Let her sell her nechse malug property in order to pay for the damages that she caused to another person. What's the big deal? Why would the Mishnah tell us that she has no money? So the Gemara's argument is, takanas usha. Oh, that's it. That's the answer. Takanas usha is going to block her sale of her nechse malug property. And that's why the Mishnah is telling us that she has no money, because she can't sell the nechse malug property. So what we seem to have right now is evidence in the Mishnah to this takanas usha. So the Gemara says, L'tamech, Nihi, Namid Isla Takana Susha, Velamati Mizabna Lagamitis, Velanechimalug, Betovasana, Vititinla, Vititinlay. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what? It's not a compelling argument, because let's consider. She can't sell her Malug property. Fine. Takana Susha blocks her from selling the Malug property. Okay, but you know what she can sell? She could sell a future on her Maluk property, meaning that her Maluk property is an asset that she has. And even though she can't sell the asset, but there is a future market on that asset. I mean, again, it's much like we discussed a moment ago regarding the factoring of a ksuva note. There is a future market on that asset. So she'll go to somebody and she'll say to somebody, look, I can't sell my Maluk property, but, you know, there is a number of possibilities how this marriage is going to end. And two of them are going to favor you. Either he's going to divorce me or he's going to die before I do. Okay, so would you be interested in buying at least a possibility of buying this property? Obviously, it's going to be discounted because it's a risk. Would you be interested in buying this property on the chance that he's going to divorce me or he's going to die before me? And so there is a current value to her property, even though she can't sell the actual property itself. So there is a way of her earning an income on that property. So the Gemara says so. So what do you mean? What do you mean she can't raise money in order to pay the nechbal? Sure she can, even though she can't sell the property itself. So the Gemara says ella deleisla hachanami deleisla. So the Gemara says, okay. So you know what we have to say? We're going to have to say that she doesn't have nechse malug property. So once we're saying she doesn't have nechse malug property, we no longer have a proof to this idea of takanas usha. The Gemara now is going to address another question, another issue in terms of her being able to raise money. Gemara says, you know, every married woman, we have just acknowledged that not every married woman has property going into the marriage, but every married woman has a ksuva. And as we discussed earlier this morning, and we're saying it again right now, a married woman having a ksuva, so again, that is a note with a current market value. It's a factored market value, but it's a current market value. So if a woman does chaval, if she damages another person, so let's force her to sell her ksuva at the factored rate and then have to pay for the chaval that she did. And so, fine, she doesn't have nechse malug property. fine. She has a ksuva. So this is such a wonderful question, such a strong question. The Gemara now is going to try to deal with this question. It's really strong. So the Gemara says, "Hamani Rabbi Meir, Damar Asal Aladim Shishas Isha Afilo Shachas Blok Ksuva." So suggestion number one of the Gemara is, well, you know, the reason why every woman has a ksuva is because of Rav Meir, and furthermore, according to Rav Meir, it is prohibited for a woman to be with her husband without a ksuva. Okay, we know this. We've gone through Seder Nashim together. A ksuva is not a marriage document, right? It is a prenuptial agreement. That is all the ksuva is. It is a prenuptial agreement. It is not the actual marriage document itself. And and it's not the ksuva that's creating the marriage between husband and wife. So let's say she doesn't have a ksuva. Rav Meir says usur. Prohibited for a woman to be without a ksuva. Why? Because sometimes a man will get emotional, he'll get angry, and he'll divorce his wife. What the ksuva does is basically keeps the husband in check and makes him think once or twice before divorcing his wife. Because every time he's going to divorce her, he's going to have to pay out a lump sum. So Rav Meir says that's why a husband and wife cannot be together without a ksuva. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so maybe that's why she can't sell the tovas and her ksuva. The Gemara says, but that's not a good explanation. So the Gemara says, okay, but if she sold her note, if she sold her ksuva note, so what's the big deal? Meaning that the whole reason why a woman has to have a ksuva is so that in the event that the husband divorces her, she's going to collect. Over here, she sold the note, there's still going to be someone who's going to collect, meaning someone's going to be rooting for the divorce. Because in the event of a divorce, he will now be able to collect the full face value of the ksuva. So there will still be an impediment from him wanting to divorce his wife. There's still going to be a collector of the ksuva note. So the Gemara says, okay, so that's not a good explanation. So the Gemara says, Ela tovas ana'a mili ninu, mili la mishtabde. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? When we're talking about selling the factored value of a ksuva note, so the Gemara says it's just words. It's not, you're not selling an actual commodity. You're selling a note, and all you're doing is selling a future, really, just a future possibility of collecting on the note. So the Gemara says maybe that's why she shouldn't be able to sell the ksuva note. So the Gemara says alama lo mila demizdavne b'dinarininu. So the Gemara, what a great answer by the Gemara. Gemara says, okay, I understand you're not selling a commodity, but are you getting money for it? Yeah, good. So in other words, it's a way for her to get an income and to make money. And so, okay, they're mile, they're words. And you're just selling words. Okay, but you know what? You're getting cash for it. So why not collect her factored value of her ksuva in order to pay the chovah? So once again, what a struggle. The Gemara is really struggling to try to understand why is it that a woman shouldn't be required to sell the factored value of her ksuva every time she does chavalah. I understand that she only so much payment you can make with that, but at least have her do it so that she pays a nechba. So the Gemara says mishum de Shmuel. So the Gemara gives another suggestion. Well, maybe it's based on the rule of Shmuel, which is damar Shmuel amochir shachov lechavero v'chazor machla machol. Now Shmuel's rule is that when you sell a note to anybody, this is true by the sale of any note. When you sell the note to anybody, so you, even though you sold your note, still have the ability to forgive the loan. And it goes even one step further, Vafil Yarish Mochel. Not only can you forgive the loan, but let's say you, the seller of the note, die, and you have a Yarish and you have someone who inherits, he can also forgive the loan as well. Now this halacha of Shmuel, we've discussed it a number of times throughout the Gemara. It's Baba Kama, it's the right time to mention the halacha of Shmuel, the forgiveness of a note after you sell it. So first and foremost, we could say that's wrong. Meaning, when I say that's wrong, it's ethically, it's more morally incorrect that you're going to sell a note to somebody, you're going to get now cash for that note that you sold, and then you're going to forgive it. It's not right. Okay, we could say that out loud. That's easy. So it's what we have discussed also in the past is on what grounds do you have the ability to do that? How can you forgive a note that you sold? It's no longer your collectible. It's no longer your account receivable. You sold the account receivable to somebody else. How can you forgive the note? So the Rishonim spend a lot of discussion in terms of how to address this, the most famous. And it's I don't know about that, but the most popular. The most popular explanation is that one provided by Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that when you have an IOU, when you are the holder of a note, so you have two shibudim, you have two liens. What Rabbeinu Tam refers to as the shibud aguf and the shibud karka. Or in other words, you have a personal lien and you also have a lien against the property of the borrower. So when you sell a note, so you're basically selling over the shibud karka, but you are retaining for yourself the shibud aguf, your own personal lien on that note. You can never sell; you always retain that for yourself. So that's Rabbeinu Tam says. So when you sell a note, you still have a shibud on that loan. You still have a lien on that loan, and that's how you can forgive it even after the sale. Anyway, the Gemara is basically bothered over here is, and it's not bothered, this is a suggestion. So why is it that a woman cannot turn around and sell her tovus and her v'ksuva, the factored value of v'ksuva, in order to pay for the chavala that she does? So the Gemara says maybe it's because of Shmuel's rule, which is that after she sells the ksuva, she can then forgive the ksuva. To which the Gemara says, Amre zevuni zavim v'titin lei v'imachra lei l'gabi bal timcha lei. So the Gemara says brilliantly, what's the big deal? Meaning, look, did she sell her the factored value of v'ksuva? Yeah. Did she raise the money? Yes. Can she pay the nechbal? Can she pay the victim of who she assailed? Yes. Is she going to turn around and forgive the note? Okay, maybe she will. But mission accomplished, meaning she paid for the damages that she did. So the Gemara says, so this is also not going to be a good enough explanation. So the Gemara says, okay, but look, once the ksuva has left her hands, once she sold the ksuva to somebody else, and now, in a current state of her marriage, she likes her husband. So she's going to say to her husband, look, when I was holding the note, and I was going to be the recipient of all that money upon either death or divorce, so I'm not forgiving the loan. But now somebody else is holding on to the paper. I sold and someone else is holding on to the paper. In our current state of marriage, I like you. I'm for sure going to forgive thee. I'm going to forgive it. So the Gemara says, well, why doesn't she sell the Tovas Ana to none other than the victim himself? In other words, so now he'll be the holder of the note. But the Gemara says, but that's not a good solution. In fact, that's a terrible solution. So the Gemara says, the imachla gabeba lo kamafsin, the hashanam lo mi de kayavile. So the Gemara says, well, look, now if she forgives a note from the standpoint of the victim, nothing gained but nothing lost. Meaning, right now, before she sold the note or before she gave him the note, what did he receive in terms of restitution, reparation for the chavala, for the damages? Zero. What is he receiving if she gives him the factored value of the ksuva, so, and then she forgives it? Gamkain, zero. But at least nothing gained, but certainly nothing lost. But the Gemara says, so kolagabi bal vademachla vachechu beidina bichdi lo mitrachinim. But the Gemara says, but come on. Meaning, ultimately, when all said and done, what are we talking about over here? She hurt somebody. She hit somebody. She's going to give him the ksuva note as restitution for the damages that she done, and she'll forgive the note, and he'll end up with nothing anyway. And you've wasted a lot of people's times, and significantly, you've wasted Basin's time in going through this whole process. And meanwhile, the victim is not going to get paid anything. So the Gemara says, we don't want that. We don't want somebody to just simply waste the time of Beis Din all so that nobody gets paid anything. Okay. So, where are we right now? Struggling. Meaning, what we want to know is, why is it the case that when a woman does chavala to another person, why is it that we don't expect her to A, sell her nechse malug? Answer to that is takana zusha. B, sell at least the future of her nechse malug. Gemara says, that's a pretty good question. Maybe we're talking about a case where she doesn't have any. And C, why not sell the factored value of her ksuva? That also has a value to it, and she can make money. She can have a revenue based on the factor value of her ksuva. Why doesn't she sell that? And the Gemara gave a number of suggestions of why it is in fact that she doesn't sell it. But ultimately, when all said and done, we really don't have a good explanation. Okay, so We're continuing in the Gemara. We're on Pei Tes Amud Beis. We are a little bit. We are about a third of the way down in the Gemara, and now even less. So the Gemara says, "Elahad Tanya." Sorry, we're four lines from the top of the Amud. Okay. So the Gemara now is going to continue in the discussion of when a woman damages another person. So why isn't she expected to sell off either the Tovas Hanav, the Nechsem Alug, or the note? In other words, there are ways for her to make money. And the Hadat Tanya, so the Gemara says, we'll consider the following. V'chein hi shechavla beba'ala lo yisidak sivasa. Let's say there is, unfortunately, in the marriage itself, domestic abuse, and the woman hit her husband. And the woman hit her husband and caused a chavala in her husband. So now, in theory, she should have to pay the husband. She also has a ksuva. The Braisa says that when she is chovel her husband, lo hifsida ksuvasa. She doesn't lose any of her ksuva. So the Gemara says, Amai. Tis benenini alei l'ksuvasa labala betavasana. So b'ha chavala. So the Gemara says, well, why not sell to the husband the tovas hana of the ksuva? Again, the ksuva itself is paper, and it has a current factored value. So why not allow the husband to collect based on the current factored value of the ksuva? D'yimachla gabeba, like a pseda. So the Gemara says, now here, what if she forgives the ksuva? Well, there's not going to be any loss because she's forgiving a ksuva that actually he has to pay. You want to forgive it? Go ahead. Be my guest. In other words, that's a note that I have to pay. So the Gemara says, "Havada Rameir Hidamar Asal Adam Shishas Isha Afilo Shachas Belok Suva." So the Gemara says, "Well, here we can certainly employ the rule of Rameir. Meaning, remember, we want every married woman to have a ksuva because we want the husband to think once, twice before divorcing his wife. Make it financially difficult for him to divorce his wife, and it'll basically take away the emotion out of the decision of making a divorce." So the Gemara says, "V'tama Ma'ike Deshalotei Kalabein Avlotzia Hachemegarish." So the Gemara says, okay, generally speaking, I understand. Over here, however, consider, she hit him. She owes him money. So ultimately, when all said and done, so isn't there going to be offsetting obligations? Meaning he divorces her. He's going to have to pay her ksuva. Okay, but she's going to also have to pay him damages. So the truth of the matter is that anyway, we're at the financial point where it's a zero-sum game. And there's no longer money that he has to pay her if he divorces her. So you're telling me that, well, she's not going to sell him the Tovas Hanav, the Ksuva, because then there won't be any impediment to divorce her. There already is no impediment to divorce her, because when he does, she's going to have to pay her. She's going to have to pay him the Demei Chavala. And aren't we already offsetting each other? So So the Gemara makes a point, which is, okay, he'll divorce her. He'll pay her the ksuva, but at the same time, but wait one second, you owe me demei chavala. So the Gemara says, "Kagon de nafish ksuvasa." So the Gemara says, well, maybe the case here in question that the Braisa is addressing is where the value of the ksuva exceeds the demei chavala. So the Gemara says, "Demishma uporta lo mafsituva." So the Gemara says, because now let's consider that, yes, it's true that if he divorces her, he's going to get paid the Demei Chavala, but he's also going to have to give up a lot of money for the Ksuva. It still would be a basic impediment from him wanting to divorce her, his wife. It's not going to be worth it to him to collect that small amount of Chavala. So the Gemara says, okay, let's say that the Ksuva that he would have to pay her greatly exceeds that of the Demei Chavala. And let's say that there was a Tosefis, there was an addition to the Ksuva, where we learned back in Ksuva that there's a base amount that a husband has to promise his wife that he's going to pay her upon death or divorce. And then on top of that, if he would like to add Tosefis, he may do so. It's encouraged to add Tosefis to the Ksuva. Let's say, says the Gemara, that she is right now holding on to a ksuva that is a lot of money, that its face value is a lot of money, far exceeding the ksuva d'araisa of 200 zuz that we learned in the beginning of Masechta Ksuvas. So why not sell off the Tosefis again, the factored value of the Tosefis, and she'll still be holding on to the base ksuv in her hand. So now we got everything accomplished. She's going to now be able to pay for the chavala that she did, and she'll still be holding on to the base value of the ksuva. So the Gemara says, "Kigon de lenish lo nefish ksuva miksuva deraisa da vechavala arba zuze de mishum arba zuze lo mafsid esrim vechamesh." So the esrim vechamisha. So the Gemara says that we're talking about a case where the Tosefis does not far exceed the base value of the ksuva. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, so then there really is no strategy, no financial strategy in which she would be able to sell it for ksuva, still retain the base value of the ksuva, and be able to pay off the chavala. So basically what the Gemara is doing right now is it's really limiting the halacha of the Braisa, where the Braisa says that if a woman physically harms her husband, so there's not going to be any avenue in which she can pay for it. We're talking about a very specific scenario. Elaha detanya. Okay, so the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following, and this is a continuation of the Braisa. Kishem shalo timkor vihi tachtav, kach lo tafsid vihi tachtav. So the Gemara says, just like she is not expected to sell while she's married to him, she's also not expected to lose. So the Gemara says, v'azim and demishkach la demifsada. So v'hechidami, the Gemara says, what do you mean she's not expected to lose? Gemara says, I can easily envision a scenario in which she's going to lose, kigon de nefishik ksuva miksuva da raisa, where, let's say, in the scenario we just described, where there is a Tosefis, there's an addition to the base value of the ksuva, and so therefore she should be expected to sell off the Tosefis in order to pay the chavala. So what does the Braisa mean when the Braisa says, well, there's never going to be a case of loss? Sure, there's going to be a case of loss if there's a large Tosefis to her ksuva. She should sell that off for its factored value and retain the base value of her ksuva, and she's going to lose. So the Gemara says, "Amarava seifas on the ksuva's been in dechrin." So the Gemara says, "No, that the end of the brisa over there was not talking about a woman and the possibility that she's going to lose some of her ksuva. No, the truth of the matter is she is going to lose some of her ksuva if she has a very high Tosefis. The last part of the brisa was talking about ksuva's been in dechrin. Let's say it quickly. Let's say it succinctly. The Rashi over here goes through it in great detail. Ksuvas benin dichrin is another institution that was made by the Chachamim, that when a woman dies, so all of her estate goes to her husband. However, Ksuvas benin dichrin is going to make sure that her estate is going to stay with her children. Meaning that when in the event that she dies and her estate goes to her husband, when the husband dies, the estate's going to go down to his children and should be equitably divided amongst all of his children. What Ksuvas benin dichrin is going to do is make sure that her estate remains earmarked and her estate is only going to go down to her children. So that if a man is married to multiple wives, so that her estate will not be divided amongst the other children that went to other wives. Okay, that's Ksuvas benin dichrin. And the Braisa, all the Braisa means at the end is that when a woman sells her Ksuva, meaning sells the Tovas and Avar Ksuva, she does not lose the institution of ksuvas benin dichrin. Okay. V'hachi ktani k'shem she'amlocher ksuva l'achem lo hafsid ksuvas benin dichrin. Ma'itam ezuzuhu dan suwa. When a woman sells her ksuva, she will not lose the institution of ksuvas benin dichrin, with the understanding that when a woman is in a position of selling her ksuva, the factored value of her ksuva, she's desperate for money. So kach mocher ksuvas alabal lo hafsid ksuvas benin dichrin. So the same thing is true regarding a woman who's selling her factored value of her ksuva over to her husband. She's still not going to lose out the institution of ksuva's been indifferent. My time is zuzuhu dan suwa, because there's a clear understanding that the circumstances are forcing her into this position, and she should not lose out the benefit of this rabbinic institution just because she's selling her ksuva. Okay. Where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So it all started with Takana Susha, which is a great place to start. But then after that, it went into, the Gemara went, I don't want to say off the rails, it did not go off the rails, but basically we're trying to wrap our head around this idea that when a woman does damage to another person or to her very own husband, so why isn't she expected to raise money in order to pay for the damages? And there are income sources, there are revenue sources for a woman, even though when she's married, her money is locked with her husband, but there should be revenue sources. Okay, so again, just to review what we have learned today, what are some of the revenue sources that a woman has? So she can't sell her nechse malug because of takana susha, fine, but she should be able to at least sell tovas hanav, the nechse malug, right, the future possibility of that nechse malug, or she should be able to sell the tovas hanav of Riksuva. She should be able to sell the factored value of Riksuva. So those are two revenue streams. So the Gemara asks the question, why not expect a woman to sell either one of those in order to pay for her the damages that she did? And the Gemara, to be quite frank and to be honest, the Gemara did not resolve these questions of why she shouldn't be expected. We're going to come back later on these topics. But those are the questions. We are now going to return back in the Gemara to the topic of Nechse Malug and Takana Susha, which prevents her from selling her Nechse Malug. As we discussed in the beginning of today's shiur, she should be able to sell her Nechse Malug. She is the owner of the property. The husband only has Peros. We subscribe to Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that Kinyan Peros Lavka Kinyan Aguf. She should be able to sell it. But the Chachamim instituted in Usha the prevention of her selling her Malug property.
Isn't there a Midoraita? The whole concept of that story of the woman's husband was fighting with another man, she grabbed.
Yep.
Right. So that's all the right stuff that she has to actually pay, you know?
So the
what happens to that?
Right, the katsasas kapa, yes, and she's gonna pay. So under what circumstances is she gonna have money to pay? That's okay, good. That's a good question. It's a really good question. Okay. Allow me to think. So the Lema Takanas Usha Tanaihi. So we are now on Sadi Tesam and Beis. We are now two-thirds of the way down in the Gemara. And we are now going to suggest that this issue of Takanas Usha is really subject to a Machlokis Tanai. Now, did Nichada Avde Malug Yotzim B'Shein V'ayin Leisha V'lo Leish. Okay, a woman has a Eved Kenani. And it's Malug property. Meaning that when she got married, so she went into the marriage with an Eved Kenani. And now as a, it's part of her estate, it's part of her assets, and now going into the marriage as such, so the Eved Kenani is now going to be treated the same way that any asset's going to go into the marriage, where she has a Karen and the husband's going to enjoy the Peros, which I guess effectively means that the Eved Kenani is going to be able to serve her husband. Either way, question goes like this. And Avde Malug Yotzim B'Shein V'Ayin Leisha V'lo Leish. Somebody knocks out a extremity of the Eved Kenani, so he goes free. But that's when the owner knocks out the extremity. We are now discussing in the Gemara, what if you have an Eved who is a Malug property of a woman? So who is considered the owner so that when his extremity gets knocked out, he's going to be able to go free? So in the Brisa, we have competing Brisas on this issue. So Yotzim B'Shein V'Ayin Leisha V'lo Leish. So one Brisa says that the woman's the owner, and therefore if she knocks out an extremity, he goes free. But the husband, who is not an owner, so therefore if he knocks out an extremity, he does not go free. V'tan Yidach, the Gemara quotes another Brisa, L'lo Leish V'lo Leisha. The second Brisa says, no, neither of them are considered the owner. Which means this for this unfortunate Eved Kenani, he's really stuck. Okay, he does not have a singular owner. Now, before we should be compassionate, but before we're compassionate, so let's clinically understand what is the difference between these two brises. So, Savru Dekolei Ama Kinyan Peros Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dami. So we're going to start off with the assumption. You know how these things work. When the Gemara sets it up, so we have to put our assumptions in place in order to explain. So we're going to assume that Kinyan Peros Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dami, which means that the husband who only has the Peros ownership on the Eved Kenani, so that's considered nothing. Like Reish Lakish. So my law ba'akim ifligi demanda amr lisha leifle takana zusha umanda amr lo lish v'lo lisha ifle takana zusha. And now what's at odds over here is whether or not we subscribe to takana zusha. We do not subscribe to takana zusha. And the Gemara is saying it brilliantly. Meaning, look, if you don't subscribe to takana zusha, so who is the owner of the Eved Kenani? The woman. And the woman could sell, and this is the woman's Eved Kenani. The wife's Eved Kenani. So now she's the owner. If she knocks that one of the extremities, he's going to go free. That's Brisa number one. What about Brisa number two? Brisa number two, once you subscribe to Takana Susha, that inhibits her from selling. Once she's inhibited from selling, she's no longer considered now the owner. What is the reflection of ownership? your ability to sell. Once her ability to sell is blocked, so therefore she no longer can be considered the owner. So that's the second brisa that says that if the husband or the wife were to knock out an extremity, he does not go free. So the Gemara is now suggesting that the difference between brisa number one and brisa number two is whether or not we do or do not subscribe, or I'll say it in correct order, we do not or we do subscribe to Takanas Usha. So the Gemara says, lo, dekula yama islay Takanas Usha. The Gemara says, no. Everyone subscribes to Takanas Usha, lakan karum takana kan lacher takana. So the Gemara says, we'll give a number of good explanations. One explanation, says the Gemara, is, look, as I pointed out in the beginning of this year, Takana Zusha was instituted late in the game, meaning it was after Chorban Bayis Sheni. It's more than possible that we have a Braisa that is teaching us the halacha of what life was like before Takana Zusha. So the one Braisa that says that if the woman knocks out an extremity, he goes free, that Braisa was taught before Takana Zusha. The second brisa that says that he's not going to go free whether he or she knocks out an extremity is being taught after Takana Zusha. The E by Sam of the Gemara says, I'll give you another explanation. So the Gemara says, and I'll give you another explanation, and that is based on the teaching of Rava. This teaching of Rava has been taught to us a number of times, and it goes like this. Hekdesh, Chametz, Fishichur, Mafkin, Mide, Shibud. You have a Shibud, you have a lien. Generally speaking, that lien is iron. It's a hold, it's a lock. So when I have a lien on a property, that means then that in the event that an obligation is owed to me and I have a lien on that property, so that I'm going to be able to exercise that lien and collect on that property. There are three things that are going to break a Shibud. One, hekdesh. If the owner of the property dedicates it to the Bedek HaBayis, so that's going to forgive the lien. Two, chametz. If, let's say, I lend money and I use chametz as my security, meaning generally speaking property is used as a security, but in this particular case I point to the chametz and I say, this chametz, you're right, you see my liquor my liquor cabinet? Actually, if you saw my liquor cabinet, it's not that impressive. I'm happy to report. But you see my liquor cabinet over there? That's going to be the security. So once Pesach rolls around and once that chametz now becomes aser, and aser ben hana'ah, that breaks the lien. And three is going to be shechur. If I use an Eved Kenani as my security against the loan, so once I free him, so that's going to break the lien as well. Mafkin midei shibud, these are the three things that are going to break a shibud. And the Gemara says, and maybe that is what the difference is between brisa number one and brisa number two. Meaning that despite the fact that everyone subscribes to Takanas Usha, and that means that the husband has a lien against the Eved Kenani, against his wife's Eved Kenani, but his freedom, his emancipation is going to break his lien. But the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. We have two brisas. One brisa says that the Eved goes free, and the other brisa says the Eved does not go free. Now what's coming out is that if we're putting these two brisas side by side, you're now telling me that the statement of Rava is subject to a machlokas tanaim. And the Gemara says, and we generally speaking don't like to say that. Lema de Rava tanaihi. So the Gemara says, now you really mean to tell me that the statement of Rava is subject to a machlokas tanaim? Lo, de kule alma is laid de Rava. So the Gemara says, now everyone really subscribes to Rava. Vahacha amur abam. So the Gemara says, look, really, fundamentally, everyone agrees with Rava. And when a slave goes free, that's going to break the Shibud. However, Takanas Usha is a super Shibud. It creates the kind of Shibud where, generally speaking, at a regular Shibud, the emancipation, the freedom of an Eved is going to allow his freedom. Takanas Usha is going to be on top of that. Ebay Sema, let's just do one more. Ebay Sema, Dekule Amma Leis Lulani Tanai Takanas Usha. So the Gemara says, and maybe both Brisas do not subscribe to Takanas Usha. V'hacha Bekinyan Peres Kekinyan Aguf Dami Kemiflagi Ove Pluk Tadani Tanai. And the Gemara says, and maybe then what's at odds over here is whether or not Kenyan Aperis is considered Kenyan Aguf. Meaning, the machlokas of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish that we saw in yesterday's daf could very well be the difference between the two brises of whether or not the husband's Kenyan Aperis is going to be consider him to be the owner. This suggestion needs more explanation, more amplification. We will do this in the course of tomorrow's daf.